He wanted to arm Mujahideen.
There! Who's the fucking nihilist around here, you bunch of fucking crybaby?
Don't hate me, bro!
Well, come too close to me.
A new world order. Pan emerge. A new era.
A new era.
My name is entitled Snowbird Asshole.
That land over there is yours.
Because your cause is right, and God is on your side.
How's it going? Another post-void post. I know it's been a long while, but, you know, I don't want this page to... I don't think it's ever really going to go inactive. Well, I mean, you know, if Joe Rogan stays on, at least I can. Ho-ho! But, you know, I just kind of wanted to touch base, you know, put out a new one since it's been a while. Like I said, this is a hobby of mine, so... if I don't feel inclined to make an episode, I'm not going to. But if I do, then I do. So, you know, definitely have some things to mention, get off, you know, just kind of fill the air with, I guess. And so, might as well talk about some personal stuff, you know, good personal stuff. As I've said many times in my past episodes, I am a masshole. I live in Massachusetts. There's no other... What are you going to call us? Massachusetts residents? Because that's what they call us on the news and such. We're called massholes. There's no... Massachusetts residents. It's, I think it's like the only state that you have to use like two words for their, for people that live there. Like, right? Like, trying to... like New Mexicans, maybe? Yeah. Anyways. I was a Floridian for 3 days. Yeah, I, for the first time in my life, I went to Florida. Yeah, I've never actually gone to Florida in my life. Oh, yeah, my parents didn't love me because they didn't send me to Disneyland or World. No, I remember when I was a kid specifically saying, I don't feel like going to Disney, spend the money on something more interesting. And that's what we did. We went to cooler theme parks in other parts of the country. Midwest has a lot better theme parks than Disney World, in my opinion. Anywho... I found a cheap flight, you know, one of those midweek flights and such. I went down to Tampa Bay because, you know, so there's something, like a couple things in the back of my mind that I was thinking. And I'm like, I could have gone to Tampa. I could have gone to like Fort Lauderdale or something. But I chose Tampa. And, you know, well, of course, Tom Brady went from Boston to Tampa. I also know a lot of people that have lived, especially like older people, I guess you could say in that boomer generation, Gen X area, that have relocated from central Massachusetts to specifically that Tampa Bay, Sarasota type area. And so it's always kind of intrigued me. I've always like kind of looked at it almost like a sister city, almost, if you will. And I was not wrong. I was not wrong upon that assumption. And I met a lot of... I guess you could call them ex-masses, or like, because they're not expats because they're living in the United States, but all these people relocated from like Michigan and Massachusetts living in that area. So it's like a bunch of people from like Boston and Detroit, like hanging out in palm tree settings and stuff. It was very cool. I highly enjoyed it. And I'm not going to talk about this for too long, but it is something that really... opened my eyes. I have never seen Southern hospitality before in my life, like where like best friends, like people that are like very good acquaintances, will do even like the kiss on the cheek and stuff like that. Like I was like, whoa, like I you know, I wasn't like no homo, you know, or anything like that. Of course not, you know, this isn't 1995, but you know, like anyways, I was like, I was blown away. I was like, oh my god, like that is, I'm like, I saw more kissing in that one day than I have in 2 years in New England. Yeah, because, you know, COVID. Anyways, and the area is amazing. I really do vibe with it, I feel. Like, I, you know, some people say, oh, Tampa can be a little grody. Well, I mean, same goes for New England. And, but there's definitely, it has its quirks as well, too. I went to St. Petersburg on the second day. And if you ever find yourself in Tampa Bay, which St. Petersburg's about 15 miles, a short, quote-unquote, hop-skip over the bay, over an amazing bridge, And when you go into St. Pete, in downtown St. Pete, there's this area called the Sunken Garden. I went there and, oh my Lord, like it was really crazy. I've never seen a botanical garden like this in my life. And I would say that it was definitely almost spiritual in a sense. Like the story with the Sunken Garden is that it was a pond or a small lake that a farmer had bought the land of in the early 1900s in St. Petersburg, before St. Petersburg was connected to Tampa. So back then, oops, sorry, I forgot a buzz. Back then, it was very, very distant. And so he was kind of like, you know, like a frontiersman almost living on the coast. He drained this pond or this lake in order to make a farm in which would otherwise be a sandy area. So it was one of the first farms in St. Petersburg. And then, obviously, through industrialization, farms were no longer needed. So instead of, you know, just selling the land and filling it in, they were like, oh, well, we have this, like, natural pool that can flood. So what if we just planted a bunch of, like, jungle trees in here and the jungle trees soak up the water? It's crazy. So I'm like, it is technically, I guess, considered the lowest garden on Earth or something, because it's, like, 20 feet below sea level. And you kind of do go into it, and it's like, and it's so cool. They have trees from like Madagascar. They have this crazy Cuban royal tree that is the most intimidating tree I've ever seen in my life. Like, it is a 150-foot palm tree with these vines. You know, I'll put a picture in the thumbnail of this specific tree, because that was probably one of the coolest pictures I was able to capture in the Sunken Gardens. But if you ever find yourself in St. Petersburg, it costs $15. It's absolutely amazing. I could have stayed in there almost the whole day. I could have stayed in there till sunset and like chilled on a bench with bees and little anoles, which are these little tiny lizard things, and like all sorts of stuff like all around. You know, there's snakes in there and stuff. It's so cool. So anyways, I wanted to rant and rave about the Sunken Garden. Also, check out the St. Pete Beach. Its beach is amazing because they have like really cool bars, really chill bars like on the beach. You just walk up and just have a great old time and good conversation and see the sunset over the ocean, because you know it's Gulf facing. So yeah, it's definitely an experience. And then the last day was kind of odd because that night I went to the St. Pierre Beach. I came back. I kind of, you know, you're at a hotel. I was by myself. You know, you're milling around with the other people at the hotel and stuff like that. I was in Florida and I was able to smoke a joint, which was kind of nice because it was actually, I'm not going to, well, I don't think I'm giving away too much, but yeah, he was an Alaskan, and he had a joint. I'm like, dude, I'm from Mass, and I thought I wasn't going to be able to smoke weed at all during this vacation, and you're from Alaska, and you have a joint? What the fuck? Like, it was pretty cool. It was funny. That guy was awesome, but, like, he was a wealth of knowledge. But then I met another person, and, oh, I learned fast kind of sad the veteran community is in Florida. Like, there's something weird going on there where it's like they're like kind of like shacking up veteran people in like hotels and stuff like that. And it doesn't seem like they're getting the proper care. And like, I mean, there's probably just because there's so many veterans living in that warm community. But like, and also this guy was a local too. But like, oh my God, I hung out with him for a bit. I brought him down to the Manatees, and he had a great time. He was a riot. He was a crack riot. He definitely made me laugh a good amount of times, belly laughs, but also, like, his mind was gone, and, like, yeah, like, there was, like, I felt bad, like, kind of scared me a little bit, actually, a little intimidated me a little bit, but, like, I was never scared for my life. I was just more, like, scared, like, what are you saying, dude? And then, I have a feeling you might have, you know, been on something. But, I let him go, and, then, yeah, so I hung out with a really, really, like, somebody roughly about my age, maybe a decade older, in Florida, who was a very, very, like... Like, you think Hunter S. Thompson, like, his character in Fear and Loathing was whacked out? Like, whoa, buddy. Yeah, and but sadly, this man was a veteran, and he was, like, jumping around with from veteran help to veteran help. And I'm like... I don't know. That one part kind of did, like... It was very real, and I kind of am glad I experienced that, because I was like, that... I've mentioned it very lightly. It's actually the first time I've really mentioned it to anyone, because it's on a podcast that doesn't have my real name on it. he was something else, and it made me feel a little, I hope he's all right. You know, I mean, like, it's one of those people too, where I'm like, damn, man, I wish I could help you, but I can't. It wasn't asking for money either. It was just more like he was just in left field. But yeah, I've made episodes about MK Ultra in the past. You can draw your own conclusions there. So, yeah, then final day, I went to Ybor City, which is spelled Y-B-O-R. And that was amazing. It's called Cigar City for slang. Cigar bars and the most, like, the most classy strip clubs you have ever seen. Like, they're... Cabernets, like, you know, like the Cabernets where they actually have like the pianos and like the girl that's topless, but she's like singing atop the piano and stuff like that. Like, they had those bars, and I was like, this is so cool. Like, it was actually really awesome. Ybor City, if you ever get a chance to visit it on a Saturday or a Friday, do it. Yeah. I missed the Pirate Festival by a week, but I mean, if I had gone during that time, my plane ticket would have been an extra $400. So, you know. Anyways, yeah, I just thought I would talk about Tampa, the southern sister city of many eastern cities. Yeah, I mean, I felt like when I was down there, I was getting obviously a mix of Florida, but also like a mix of like Philadelphia, Detroit, and Boston kind of as well too, like at least in Tampa. Like I feel like if I went anywhere else in Florida, I wouldn't get that type of weird northeastern vibe, but I did. And it was in, yeah, so... Anyways, I'm going to probably go on about my fears of the DC convoy, because I have some general concerns about that. I don't think it's going to look like what we're seeing in Canada, because I'll get into that. Believe me, I support them, but I do support them. I of course I support the right for they're doing nothing wrong. People are calling them like, oh, they're somehow associated to far rights and Nazis, but we can't prove it. It's like, yeah, it's because you just want to paint them as that. But anyways, they're also supported by unions. What are you going to call you, like, the Teamsters freaking far right? Come on. I'll get into my fears of the DC convoy. And before I start this next part off, I will just give this disclaimer. What I'm about to say, in no way am I wishing or jinxing or trying to do anything like that. I'm just reading the tea leaves as I see them, and I'm like, seems like these truckers are driving into a lion's den with their livelihoods. Yeah, because we all know what happened with January 6th, and there's some other points I'm going to be bringing up. But alrighty, on to part two. One side note before I go into my really just apprehensive predictions is that I just saw a possum in my backyard, which is a great thing. Possums, or opossums, as people like know how to, you know, the only marsupial that is in the Americas. Yeah, possums are amazing. If you see a possum in your yard, do never scare it away. Make sure it stays, because possums are like pretty much your nature's best friend. It eats
every single vermin and every single pest that you don't want around your house. I listened to a podcast, Our Big Dumb Mouth. I've mentioned it before. I've called in a couple times. And Midnight Mike, the host, has a farm in his backyard. And he's often talking about how he has this huge tick problem and stuff like that. And I believe he started breeding chickens to eat the ticks. But in areas where that's not possible or just not feasible, like if you have a single possum, just one, you know what a possum's look like, or a possums, a possum looks like, you know, they look pretty scary, but they eat every single pest that like you really have to worry about. And they also like scare off like rabbits and stuff, which like the rabbits, they don't like scare them off, but they're like larger animals. So it's like the rabbit's going to make a den in your backyard. If there's already an opossum there, or I keep saying opossum, if there's already a possum there, then it's not going to build a burrow. So it's like, if you have a possum basically staking a claim over your garden, it's golden. And like, and it will eat the pests and the ticks and everything else. It's like, yeah, really. And I don't think they carry any diseases at all, like, period. I think they can't even become rabid. I think they're like one of the ones that are immune to rabies, like some sort of weird thing like that. Yeah, like look it up. It's basically like possums would be man's best friend if they were able to be domesticated. But like, yeah. Anyways, I saw a possum running through my backwoods area, and I'm like, yes, we have a possum. Yeah, like, it's very funny, like to be excited about seeing a wild animal living next to your house. Like, yeah, no, I'm not kidding. Yeah, those things are godsends. Like, at least to, like, you know, godsend for humans, you know, at least. Yeah. Whew. So I have something a lot more depressing to talk about than seeing a possum. Now, I was thinking about what article to bring up for this, because, you know, I guess I gotta give a little bit of why I am pulling up this article first. From what I've been seeing in Canada, from what I've been seeing with the Canadian truck convoy, it reminds me the most of the early days of Occupy Wall Street. Now, that might sound a little strange to you, because you might think, oh, well, that was like some sort of left movement, and now I look at this truck convoy as a right movement. Well, it seems pretty, they seem inherently to be doing the same thing. They're occupying streets, given actually the truckers are allowing for emergency vehicles to pass, but also too, even in Occupy, they did, remember, Occupy was a while ago. Like, they're, you didn't hear too much about like cities burning and such during that time. I mean, I'm not trying to make a comparison here to what's been happening recently. I'm more just saying, like, I was there at Occupy, and I do know that, like, if there was ever an emergency, we parted the ways, because we did not want to stop a life or anything like that. And we did. And, you know, and, like, we really did. So I'm honestly looking at these Canadian trucker protests. It's weird, because it's like, it seems like a flashback. Like, they're getting long-range acoustic devices, LRADs, used on them and such, especially now in what's happening in Australia. And all of that seems just so, like, I've been to these actions. It literally looks like this was recorded 10 years ago and just shown to me today. Like, you know, I'm just saying, as in, like, what I'm seeing out there. Like, it's very peculiar. I've not seen a direct, I'm calling this a direct action. I have not seen a direct action like this in a while, this Canadian convoy, which I do believe is kind of organic. And I do think that what they're doing is completely correct, and they're doing it the right way. They have support. They have just up until recently, the Mounties have been going against them. But I think they don't want to, but I mean, you know, the cops, they have a job to do. It's to serve the state, you know, like, so yeah. But it's rather interesting. And also, too, with the whole thing that they shut down their funding and all that stuff. It's like, you can tell this, all of this seems, it's, I've seen it before. And I've seen it 10 years ago at Occupy. And they're pretty much complaining about the same shit. Like, corporate mandates and the state coming in. And at least in Occupy, we were complaining about imperialism. Here, I think they're still complaining about imperialism, right? But it's on their homeland. Say what you will about, oh, there's like Nazi sympathizers or something. No, there's not. You, like, if there's one or two truckers giving somebody else a bad name, then maybe single those people out, you know? But like, this is a direct action. This is a movement over a specific subject, which is the fact that the truckers don't believe that they should be held as strict mandates as they are. The truckers believe that they should not have to deal with these strict mandates that the government has imposed upon them. It's as simple as that. And if you try to expand it any other way, you're just as bigoted as somebody else trying to say that Black Lives Matter is communist. You know what I mean? Like, they're not inherently communist, you know, but if you say that, it's like you're kind of painting a brush over anyone that would be out there for any action, you know. Maybe this sounds a little too convoluted, you know. I'm one that's been looking into the concept of direct action for a very long time, so I can kind of read it and know what's going on. In at least with the United States, don't do it. As Kamala Harris said, as Vice President Harris said, don't come. Just don't come. And you know what that was? That was a warning. Because it's like, dude, all right. Yeah, Canada might be a, they're not as psyoped, as psychologically manipulated as the American public is. And I'm going to have to take another break here, because I'm really trying to, like, be careful on what I say and my words here, because this is very hard for me to say. But I think it is it is more likely to happen, this scenario, that one of these trucks are going to contain a bomb. Yep, that one of these trucks are going to contain a bomb, and that there's going to be a bomb threat in DC during this time. It's going to be in one of the trucks. So they have to search all the trucks, because you're in Washington, D.C., where your rights are revoked. And how many times have I seen on, like, History Channel specials back when I was a kid and such, being like, oh, it's so easy to drive a box truck up Pennsylvania Avenue right in front of the White House and blow up a nuke, and no one's done it yet. They were saying that back during the War on Terror. They were using, like, that was a pretext of being like, we need to lock down D.C. because a terrorist could drive a box truck up and just blow up the White House, even though it is reinforced. But still, like, and even though the president most likely is not there, you know, but most likely in president somewhere else, you know, but anywhere, you know, but there. But still, this is something very concerning. And I'm going to pull up, so I was looking for sources. I might as well just say the one from FBI.gov of the Nashville AT&T bombing. Remember that deal? Remember that thing that didn't make any goddamn sense? maybe that was done as a pretext to plan a false flag in the future. Oof. And on top of that, no one's fucking organizing this shit. Yeah, there's some organizers now, I guess, but the only reason why they're doing this DC convoy is because it's a copycat maneuver. So, who had a bunch of planning for that then? Who maybe told him to do it in the first place? Who would be organizing all of this? Maybe the same people that organized the kidnapping of the Michigan governor? So let's go straight to the source, FBI.gov, on the AT&T bombing, and let's see if this possibly will echo in a story come the next 2 weeks. Here we go.
What is it about humanity that wants to go to all the details and stuff and listen? You know, these guys like Fauci get up there and start talking. You know, he doesn't know anything really about anything, and I'd say that to his face. Nothing. And I'd say that to his face. Nothing. And I'd say that to his face. Nothing. The man thinks you can take a blood sample and stick it in an electron microscope, and if it's got a virus in there, you'll know it. He doesn't understand electron microscopy, and he doesn't understand medicine, and that he should not be in a position like he's in. Most of those guys up there on the top are just total administrative people, and they don't know anything about what's going on in the body. You know, those guys have got an agenda, which is not what we would like them to have, being that we pay for them to take care of our health in some way. They've got a personal kind of agenda. They make up their own rules as they go. They change them when they want to. And they smugly, like Tony Fauci, does not mind going on television in front of the people who pay his salary and lie directly into the camera. You can't expect the sheep to really respect the best and the brightest. They don't know the difference, really. I mean, I like humans, don't get me wrong, but basically the vast majority of them do not possess the ability to judge who isn't a really good scientist. I mean, that's a problem, that's a main problem actually with scientists, say, in this century, because the science is being judged by people. Funding is being done by people who don't understand it. Can't hear me trust Fauci? Fauci doesn't know enough to, you know. If Fauci wants to get on television with somebody who knows a little bit about this stuff and debate him, he could easily do it, because he's been asked. And I've had a lot of people, president of the University of South Carolina, ask Fauci if he'd come down there and debate me on stage in front of the student body, because I wanted somebody who was from the other side to come down there and balance my... Because I felt like, well, these guys can listen to me, but I need to have somebody else down here that's going to tell me the other side. But Fauci didn't want to do it.
So, to start off, like I said, I was going to start with the FBI report itself, and then pose a local news article with the same, and pieces that I know were left out, because I remember watching this with great detail while it was happening, and this is only a year ago. It happened on Christmas Day, remember? It was Christmas Day. It was just the odd, very peculiar thing about it, because no one paid attention to it, because it was on Christmas. And it wasn't like this person was a terrorist, in the sense of what we are commonly know as terrorists. This type of person was like, so, I'm just going to straight shoot it right here. It was a suicide bomber to bomb a building? Like, when have you ever heard about that before? Like, a building that you knew was vacant because it was Christmas Day, right? No one was at this AT&T building because it was Christmas Day. Like, maybe a couple technicians or something. But, like, clearly this person was not trying to cause damage to a person. They were trying to, like, cause damage to a building. But it's like, it just doesn't make any sense, because it's like, what, you taking down the AT&T building in Nashville? Like, what are you doing? Like, so really, like, the only, I believe, like, the running answer with this is that the person was very into QAnon, and that they became psychotic and could not tell reality from whatever, and somehow just, like, thought to bomb the AT&T building. But then again, though, why would they, if they were so psychotic and so insane, why would they plan to do it on, like, Christmas Day, when specifically no one was there, and then also have a loudspeaker saying, like, get the fuck out? Like, what the like, it's very strange. It's so strange. And then, like, they couldn't, like, properly identify the body and, like, all this other stuff, because, like, the body was exploded, like. So it's like, was this just a dummy, was it just a cadaver in a truck? And, like, the other person
died, and then they, like, threw his dead body in the truck, and, like, I don't know, man, it's really weird. That's not a far-fetched claim to make with this story, is to say that maybe he was killed already, like, they had his dead body do it, like, because it was from a loudspeaker in a moving truck, like, ah, oh, boy, this is a very weird one. Anyways, and, hey, you know the similarity is? Fucking trucks in precarious areas. So it's like, this is why I'm showing this to you right now. This is why I'm concerned. Reading the tea leaves, that's all I gotta say. So, to continue. I am on, let me, one second, I'm gonna, FBI.gov changed their layout of their site, and I wanted to make sure I was not, like, looking at, like, FBI.com or something. No, it's FBI.gov, and I don't think that, you know, anyone could steal this away somehow, because, yeah. Anyways, from their Memphis headquarters, or Memphis, FBI Memphis, March 15th, 2021, so... that is less than a year ago. Yeah, that's only 11 months ago. FBI releases reports on Nashville bombing. Nashville, Tennessee. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, U.S. Attorney's Office for the Middle District of Tennessee, Bureau of Alcohol, oh, so the FTA, Metro Nashville Police Department, Tennessee Highway Patrol, and Tennessee Bureau of Investigations have concluded a significant portion of the investigation into the explosives, into the explosion that has occurred on December 25th, 2020. So, yeah, to, just to, yeah, I know that was, like, they have to say that wordy stuff. Basically, it was just FBI and the ATF, the FBI, and the local police department have concluded that they have a significant portion, not all of it, but a significant portion, of the investigation concluded into what happened on December 25th, 2020. So this was in 2020, Christmas 2020, Christmas Day 2020, and this was released March 15th, 2021. Sorry about that. I had to get my facts straight here. Following the explosion, the FBI worked closely with our law enforcement partners in a coordinated effort and compromise investigation. After recovering more than 3,000 pounds of evidence from the blast site, 3,000 pounds of evidence, I think that, do trucks weigh 3,000 pounds? Yeah, maybe, yeah, probably, like, they just got all the parts of the truck. Combining through more than 2,050 tips, 2,050, well, why are you counting tips? Wait, in combining with over more than 2,050 tips? Wait a second. And the FBI is not supposed to count tips. They're only supposed to count viable tips. What the? Oh, come on now. And conducting more than 250 interviews. Okay, this seems like a freaking, oh my god, this is a dragnet. What's going on? Like, wait, 2,500 tips and 250 interviews? So which ones out of all those interviews were the ones that were, like, relevant to the case? And which ones were the ones that were just people snitching on other people? Like, oh my god. The investigation team has reached the following conclusions. Holy crap, I can't believe they even told us that number of, like, the... They said 2,500 tips and 250. Why are they both 25, like, yeah, 2,500 and then 250? That's odd. Very odd numbers and... Something strange with that. I don't know. Oh, boy. The investigation found that attorney Quinn Warner of Antioch, Tennessee, right? Did I pronounce that correctly? Acted alone. Built and ultimately detonated the vehicle-borne improvised explosive device, IED. Yes. His actions were determined not to be related... Well, his actions were determined not to be related to terrorism? Whoa! The FBI saying that? This is new information to me. His actions were determined not to be related to terrorism. Wow. Huh. Well, we'll see, I guess. Oh, shit. That's very strange. The investigative team took diligent steps to determine the reason or reasons why Warner decided to conduct the ultimate detonation of his device in downtown Nashville in December 25th, 2020. They might, like, maybe say cult things or something. I don't know. The FBI Behavioral Analysis Unit, based in Quantico, Virginia, further assisted the local investigation team in answering this question. Based on the information and evidence gathered through the investigation, the FBI assesses Warner's detonation of the improvised explosive device was an intentional act, an effort to end his own life, driven in part by a totality of life stressors, including paranoia, long-held individualized beliefs adopted by several esoteric conspiracy theories, and the loss of stabilizing anchors and deteriorating interpersonal relationships. But why did he attack the AT&T? Like, there was something specific with that, and it's like he parked himself there, and come on. You can't just say this man was like, he was striving for attention. So he made an improvised bomb truck that was set at the AT&T building. Like, no. Is that what they're saying? Is that what they're really saying? Is that this man just fucking wanted to grandiose suicide himself? No. Like, why would you? Come on. Come on now. Like, that's not the most likely situation here. Like, most likely situation is that maybe there was something that they aren't telling us because of the fact that they maybe pushed him. I don't know. You could say, I'm far-fetched in making that claim, but historically speaking, so you're going to tell me they stopped, the FBI and the CIA stopped doing that after the 70s? Yeah, okay. Patty Hearst. Anyways, Patty motherfucking Hearst. Special agents, and people don't want to talk about Patty Hearst anymore. Special agents in charge of, blah, 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 blah. It's almost at the end here. I might as well finish it. Special agents in charge of Douglas Kronesk's of the FBI Memphis Field stated, "The FBI would like to thank the citizens and the private sectors of the partnership of Nashville, Tennessee, and they're supporting blah, 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 and everyone that helped us with this investigation. Suck my dick. They exemplify the tireless dedication we come to expect from those who respond to these critical incidents and also may spur them." Anyways, because they need an enemy, and we all know that this happened to Muslim people during the war on terror. So, hey, surprise, surprise. Maybe that whole thing about the NSA was actually fucking something to be concerned about. Oh, yeah. Oh, they're all spying on us? Hey, maybe that means it's going to come homeland. Domestic terrorism. Oh, started to become more and more of a common thing that we kept hearing about after Bush. Why is that? Now, it's because of the fact our democracy's dead. And, it's it's a shit show. It's a shit show. I've always known that. But it's like, I always knew it. And I was always crying about it. But I'm still dragging myself up through the muck. So on to part four. I was going to go into the whole story. I am still going to go into the whole storyline of this bombing. So it was very strange. So yeah, I just read the FBI report. And I also kind of ripped it apart while I was reading it. Because I couldn't help myself. And they're saying that you did it as a grandiose way to kill himself or something. Like, what? What? That doesn't make any sense. Wouldn't you, if you were lonely or something and driven by conspiracy theories, you would do something different than, blow up an AT&T building on Christmas Day? What was this guy watching Fight Club? Even then, you would, if he was trying to reenact the ending to Fight Club, he would, have done this at, the Federal Reserve building or something. Why is that the AT&T building? That's, always what I've been, what the fuck? So, like I said, it doesn't make sense. There's some parts of the story that don't make sense. And especially the FBI's conclusion doesn't make sense. So, and you know what? I might just hop skip and just go into a story about the kidnapping of the governor of Michigan and how like 2/3 of the people involved were FBI informants. So it's like, wait, was this just an op? This was an op. Like this was an op, just like the shoe bomber thing. Like, literally, like, because that guy, too, he had, like, a mental IQ of 70 or something, and, like, and there's been so many other, like, this is a common thing back in the War on Terror, where, like, the FBI used to dupe, essentially, mentally handicapped Muslim people into committing crimes, like, you know, we can find just as many mentally handicapped people in the United States to do those things, too, and I'm using that term. I would use the R word, but I am from Mass, but I don't like to use that because people get angry about the R word. So, you know, sorry. I mean, I'll say it, retarded, you know, like, it's like, because I wouldn't call anyone mentally handicapped that. But, and then again, I'm talking about people that are mentally handicapped getting duped by the FBI. What is the DC convoy? Anyways. On to maybe part 3.
I don't know how it will play out in November, but what we know is that we will end up with many more unemployed, and particularly also people in the gray economy, which are not counted for, who lose their jobs. So we will see definitively a lot of anger already now, but probably increased by the end of the year. Because this crisis will be with us until we really have found a remedy. So we have to prepare for a more angry world. And how to prepare? It means to take the necessary action to create a fairer world, to see that we provide everybody with decent access to the health system, that we make sure that those people who are really left behind, and I'm not speaking only on national levels, I'm speaking also internationally. If I see now the tragedy in some of the emerging countries like South Africa, like some countries in East Asia, I think it's all, I don't have too many remedies. The remedies have to be discussed through dialogue by the stakeholders of our global system, but I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
To what extent would a reset be brought about by a change in the White House, the election of Joe Biden, for instance?
I don't know. We shouldn't speculate about the outcome of the election. We will see beginning of November, and then we can, in any case, we can, and the World Economic Forum is very open and as an open platform to integrate everybody who is willing to address those issues in a spirit, which means to exercise here true global citizenship.
Just pick up on some of the economic projections. In your book, you tackle what the future may look like, and at this stage we're all grappling with various letters of the alphabet, whether it's a V or a U or perhaps even a symbol, a tick shape. Can you just give us some clues about the growth down the track, what we can expect?
First, if you look at it at the national or global level, at the macroeconomic level, one of the things we address very much in the book and we are concerned is the increase that we spend about $10 trillion worldwide to deal with the short-term negative effects of the pandemics. But we should be aware we are just increasing our debt situation. And we were already very much debt-loaded before we went into the crisis. So how to get at the end out of this debt situation is still a big question mark. Second, we know that there's quite some impact on different industries. We know that certainly the health industry, the digital industry, will go out of this crisis strengthened. But we know that many industries which rely particularly on physical interaction will have difficulties to survive. Finally, I think this is an opportunity again to find solutions which are beneficial for the next generation. So why not to tie government aid to the green economy which we have to create? Why not to make sure that we revolutionize, digitalize particularly our educational system? So we are here when we talk about the Great Reset to talk also about innovation. How can we do things differently from what we used to do? And if we speak about differently, it means also how can we do it to make sure that a majority of people are benefiting from it and not just a minority.
We started out Davos this year talking about the environment, Greta Thunberg versus Donald Trump. There's certainly a lot of headlines crossing from the mountain. But last time round in the crisis, we saw people didn't care so much about the environment when we were talking about large-scale job losses. This time seems different. Are you surprised about how strong the sustainability theme has been right through the pandemic?
No, I would see even a chance to accelerate, let's say, our transition into a green economy, because people probably recognize that we have to become more resilient. We have now the experience of one crisis. The environmental crisis, the climate crisis could be a much bigger one. So I see more awareness, but on the other hand, we have the big issue of unemployment, of low levels of employment. And I think we shouldn't see the two as contradictory objectives.
In this ride. Shut him up! Look at my furrows of worry. Look at my big bank account.
No Russian.
My superpower is being honest. I'll eat your ass. I will.
Please, squad.
You've turned every cell phone in Gotham into a microphone.
And a high-frequency generator receiver.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line.
When you hear the crunch, you're there.
So basically, what I was thinking of was, oh fuck, I can't believe you've done that.
That'd be a bad thing, don't do that.